Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life, you hear me? Give my creation life.
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get counted down.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
Your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, hello there. How you doing, everybody? Glad to have you along with us here at the Guy James Show this afternoon here on the Head On Radio Network. My goodness. I just got a chance to listen to the previous show just a little bit with Mark, and hey, did he have a guy that could talk or what? Ah, man. Sometimes you get a caller that just wants to take the show over, you know, and I guess that guy did. He reminded me, if those of you that were listening to that program, he had reminded me very much of trying to shoot the same kind of BS that Shalabi did on behalf of himself and his expatriates from Iraq. Well, so much for that subject anyway. This is a different show. Glad to have you along with us this afternoon. We've got a lot to talk about today. I got a couple of very interesting guests coming up a little bit later. In the second hour, we're going to have a gentleman called Ray Jarar. And you can Google him right now if you like. R-A-E-D-J-A-R-R-A-R. And he's going to have a very, very interesting story to tell. And in the first hour, we're going to have Chris Crome on. He has an interesting story to tell as well. We're going to talk a lot today about the Katrina disaster coming up on the first year's anniversary of that. And Chris is the executive director for the Institute of Southern Studies, and they've launched a big 100-page study on the whole thing down there. And I know a lot of them there. A lot of our listeners right now, particularly one named Sarge, is interested in what's going on the Gulf Coast. You can give us a call, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. Love to hear from you. And something a little different here today. Normally I don't go to the phone this early, but I've got my phone bank lit up. I just want to see what's happening here. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Hello?
Yeah, hi, Guy.
Hello?
Yeah, Guy?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Sure.
Hey, could you bring up the fact today about Katrina on your show at all? Because people just don't seem to have the truth on it. That, you know, I was listening to Mark Foley on Wink this morning, WNOG, with that Manny Connell or whatever name is, and Lyon. You know, they forget to mention that what killed all those people up there was the levees broke, and they were drowning.
Sure.
You know, it wasn't mainly the hurricane. The hurricane really didn't damage that town that much.
Not that much. It just so happens we're going to talk quite a little bit about it today. We've got a guest on at 3:30.
Oh, good. That's going to... See, I can't get you. I can't hear you. Because you're not live stream.
Yeah, we're on live stream.
Where do I go for that?
Just at our website, www.theguyjamesshow.com.
But you are live stream then?
Yes, we are.
For Windows. Why can't I get you?
I don't know.
I'm going to try, there. Guy.
Yeah, thegyjamesshow.com. Give
God
it a shot.
God bless you.
Well.
God love you, honey. Get on.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, that's one of our local callers here that we used to have on our local show here quite a bit, named Diane, and she's frustrated. Can't get the show. I don't know why not, but I hope she can find it. I should turn her over to the technical department. They're out of the room at the moment. Hey, we are glad to have you along this afternoon. We've got a lot to talk about. First of all, I want to talk about something briefly that some of you may not know a lot about. And I promised I would talk about it today, but I'm not getting any cooperation from the folks that that are involved in it. And I'm talking about an organization called the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC. Google that, ALEC. It is a hardcore right-wing organization. Right now, they're fighting to bust up the teachers' union. They've... Well, they've worked on one right-wing program after another. They claim to be bipartisan, but they've got like 2,400 members, and only five of them are Democrats, I believe. And as I said, right now they're trying to bust up the teachers' union. They have members on their group such as Tom DeLay, Richard Mellon Scaife, Denny Hastert. Anybody who's a hardcore Republican practically is in the group. And oddly enough, the other day, a little birdie told me that I should look around at all the Florida candidates running for office right now. And I got to looking around, and as many of you may know, we've got a Democratic primary going on here and a Republican primary for the governorship. They've got Charlie Crist and this Gallagher guy over in the, on the right. And on the Democratic side, we've got a gentleman by the name of Congressman Jim Davis. From the 11th District of Florida. He's up from up in the Tampa area. And another gentleman called Rod Smith. He's a state senator and has been quite, and quite frankly, let me be perfectly honest about it, I am backing Rod Smith in this. I think he's far better qualified. We had a debate on PBS last night here locally. I watched it, and I thought Rod Smith wiped the floor with Davis. Davis looked like the proverbial whore in church whenever he has to get up in front of a group. But his speaking ability, which I've had a chance to see several times, isn't what I wanted to talk to you about. The American Legislative Exchange Council, again, is a right-wing organization that no Democrat worth his salt would go near. I promise you. Whatever reason a Democrat would have to join that organization is beyond me. So the other day I found out through the grapevine, had to do a lot of digging, that Congressman Jim Davis, Democrat of Florida, is a member of this ALEC group. And so I contacted his office in Washington. I contacted two of his offices here in Florida. And everybody I talked to specifically denied that he has now, is now, or ever was affiliated with the American Legislative Exchange Council whatsoever. Even had one or two promise to get back to me on it, never did. Told him I was going to talk about it on the program. The person that's ahead of his campaign in Southern Florida, I sent an email, and she said she wrote back to me and said that she was going to do some research on it, wrote back and said, no, he is not now, nor was he ever affiliated with the ALEC, that I must have him mixed up with somebody else. Well, as far as I can tell, I do not have him mixed up with somebody else because I found a website, and let me see here if I can go find it right now, and I'll give you the address, where the congressman, they've got a website up about various people. And let's see here, see how quickly I can find this. Jim Davis. www.nndb.com/people/357/00000362/49/. And just look up NNDB and then put in Jim Davis's number. And right there it says on this website, a bio of him says he is a member of this ALEC. And yet his people emphatically deny it. So I thought, who else to contact? Who else should I contact but the ALEC themselves? Ask them if Congressman Jim Davis is a member of their organization. And they said, yes, in fact, he is. So we'd like to know what's going on with that situation. I would like to know why we have a Democratic candidate for governor here in this, in our state, a very important state for the Democrats. I would like to know why he is denying that he is a member or ever was a member of this ALEC right-wing lobbying group. And it's a money-grubbing organization for candidates. That's all it is. So I'd like to know that. This is an important state, a very important state, and we really need to find out what's behind that. And so far, since we found out the truth and sent the Jim Davis people the link, they have not responded in any fashion whatsoever. I have received a couple of emails from listeners whom they responded to and told them that, in fact, that he is not a member of that organization, when, in fact, I am pretty sure he is. In fact, that organization says that he is a member of that organization. Also, Jim Davis was all for the bankruptcy bill. He's one of them that signed the letter that sent to Dennis Hastert, please, let's bring up this bankruptcy bill. And so I cornered him after a local soiree here last year and asked him about that, and he had the gall to tell me I didn't know anything about the bill and I shouldn't even be asking him the question, when, in fact, I know damn well I know more about the bankruptcy bill than probably he does. He blamed the entire thing that Davis did voting on it because of the massive fraud taking place in the credit card industry, people taking advantage of the credit card company. Now, there's a good one for you, taking advantage of the credit card companies. They've been hedging their bets for years by charging people who were a higher risk, had poor credit, giving them credit cards, sending them, have you noticed lately how many solicitations you're getting in the mail for credit cards? Oh, my God. And so they solicit people with all kinds of credit, but the ones that don't have particularly good credit, oh, yeah, they give them a credit card. If they figure they can get the money out of them any way, shape, or form, charge them 24, 28% interest. So they've got their asses covered. They always keep their asses covered because they charge the extra high interest for those folks. That's why they charge it. That's why they said they charge the extra high interest. And then, well, if somebody does default, so what? They've covered it because of the extra high interest rates on everybody in that particular classification. So they were not getting pounded by people with bad credit. They were not, and they, of course, in that bill, they failed to mention that 30% of the bankruptcies are because of medical bills that people can't pay. So I have no respect for Congressman Davis whatsoever, and you will probably hear me talk about that issue quite a bit between now and the primary. I don't know if he'll win the primary or not. I certainly hope not. It looks to me like it's a pretty much of a dead heat right now. You'll have to forgive me. I'm thinking I'm going to sneeze. I'm still suffering from that doggone allergy thing. And, yeah, it makes it tough getting through a show with that. Got an appointment Monday, finally. Don't know how I'm going to sleep through the week, though. Anyway, if you have any information on the Jim Davis ALEC thing. By the way, why don't you shoot off an email to those people, the Jim Davis for Governor campaign, and ask him if he's a member. Do that for me, will you? Ask him if he's a member of the ALEC. See what kind of response you get. See if you get a denial. I'm waiting to see those websites scrubbed any day now. There's a couple of websites where you can go see where he is a member of it. I'm not saying he definitely is. I'm saying the websites say he is. I'm saying one of his own websites says he is. I'm saying the ALEC says he is. And yet his campaign says he is not. I wouldn't want to be identified with it either. I guess I'd probably lie about it too. No, I wouldn't. You'd have to tell the truth, I think. So, anyway, that's that on that subject. I'm going to pause and take a quick break right now. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
station wagon laying foundations on the shadows of overpass and plains. But I'm feeling good. 7 o'clock, we're gonna drive across the county line. Find Saturday night like an orphan child with the good days left behind. Well, I'm not sure we can stay.
But those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Welcome back to the Guy James Show. Glad to have you along with us this afternoon. We've got a great interview coming up around 3:30 or so. Get ready for that. We're going to be talking about the Katrina mess and how it's still such a mess, despite all the yammering you've heard the politicians say that they've done this and done that. Much work left to do. In fact, most of it left to do from what I can see. And that kind of ties in with what I want to talk about here in the next moment or so until we get to the bottom of the hour. How do you see the economy right now? And where do you see it going? I really believe that we're in for a hell of a ride. I think we're in for probably the worst financial times that I have seen in my lifetime. Yes, I really do believe that. And I hate to be the harbinger of bad news like that, but I really do think that it's going to happen, and I think by this time next year we'll be in an all-out hardcore recession. I don't see any way to avoid it. Wages are not going up for the average guy. Groceries are going up. Gasoline is going up. Housing is going up. Your purchasing power has actually gone down. And I really think we're headed for a recession that's going to be deeper and longer than any recession we've seen in a very, very long time. And I hope I'm wrong. I hope a year from now all of you can call me and say what a dope I am for predicting that. I hope you can do that. But there's, you know, a whole new study out, several new studies out. The Association of Realtors, for example, on Wednesday said that sales of existing homes fell by 4.1% in July, and that is a huge drop. Inventories of unsold housing is at a 13-year high. 13 years. And it's just not looking good at all. People pulled about $200 billion in the last couple of years, equity out of their homes and spent it. And now are in hock up to their ears. And it can get very, very ugly very fast, especially the people that are stuck with some of these adjustable rate mortgages that are going clear out of sight now. And will continue to do so. Hopefully, thankfully, some of them have caps on them. They can only go up, what is it, 0.5% a year? I'm not sure. I know I'm glad I don't have one anyway. But what does the rich guy do during these times? How does the rich man suffer during times when we're heading into reception and most families are working hard just to make a living, just to put groceries on the table? What does the sophisticated investor do, the jet set? How do they spend their money? Well, I ran across this study, and they checked out the private jet owners. And the private jet owners, they have found, have an average annual income of $9.2 million and a net worth of about $90 million. They're 57 years old, and 70% of them are men. And how do they spend their money? Well, I thought you'd like to know. The average jet setter in that category spends about $30,000 a year on alcohol, wines and spirits. That's it. Alcohol. They spend about experiential travel, which included guided tours such as photographic safaris or hikes to Machu Picchu and the eco tours of the Brazilian rainforest and so forth. They spend an average of about $98,000 a year for that. And then on hotels and resorts, they spend an average of $157,000 a year. And or events at hotels and resorts, $224,000 a year. An average jet setter spends $107,000 a year at spas, just at spas. Wouldn't that be nice? Only 34% of jet owners open their own mail, and only 19% of them even pay their own bills. What else here? Spend $147,000 a year on watches. Have you noticed that the Breitlings and the Cartiers and the Rolex and all those are very fashionable nowadays? $117,000 a year on clothing, or a whopping $248,000 a year on jewels. $226,000 a year. I mean, these figures are obscene, are they not? But that's how the other, I should say, I was going to say the other half lives. No. It's not how the other half lives. It's how that top 1% lives. That's how it is, really, with them. Can you imagine having that kind of money? I see they're talking about a very rich gal on the chat room, the Horn chat room right now, Head On Radio Network chat room. If you'd like to join the chat room, head on over to Head On Radio Network, and you can sign in there. And they usually keep track of what's going on in the show and have a little conversation going on besides. And welcome to all you folks who are listening in on from Democratic Underground today and Democrats.com and SmirkingChip.com. Glad to have all of you along with us today. A little bit under the weather. I've been moaning and complaining about that all week. I know. But can't seem to escape it. Coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to talk about Hurricane Katrina and her aftermath. And it's going to be interesting to me to hear the gentleman talk to us about it on how things really are. We have one of our callers call in, let us know how things are down there. But this gentleman has got a lot of facts and figures on it, but exactly how much money's been wasted, thrown away, stolen, government money. And it appears that the big problem is with the feds, just like we thought it was. They tried to, of course, put all the blame back on the local folks. And the feds just weren't doing their jobs at all. So, hey, we're going to take another quick break here, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Your kids in.
Don't try to play the hero in your manufactured war. As you manipulate the system just to settle daddy's score. Are the faces of the fallen ever haunting you at night? Screaming, why aren't you here with us?
Cause he's too afraid to fight.
I try to hold on, but I gotta let go. Don't wanna be part of this messed up show. Where your pockets are filled if the lives are lost.
Well, it's worth it just to humble you.
Whatever the cost.
This is the Quality News Network.
All the other girls here are stars. You are the Northern Lights. They try to shine in through your curtain. You're too close and too bright. They try and they try, but everything that they do is the ghost of a trace of a pale imitation of you. I'll be the one to drive you back home, Kathleen. This party was made with the night air and the chance that a smile will wipe its way from your face to one of the boys in your line. Well, you act like you're hip to their tricks and you're strong, but a virgin, Wurlitzer heart never once had a song. I'll be the one to drive you back home, Kathleen. And I'll have you back by break. Day. I'm going your way anyway. If you'd like to come be yours for a song. Oh, 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 oh.
And we're back. Welcome back to the Guy James Show. Thanks, everybody, for being with us here this afternoon. And as promised, I now have Chris Crome on the phone. He's the executive director of the Institute for Southern Studies. And I spoke to him a little bit earlier this afternoon. He agreed to come on the program and tell us about this 100-page study coming out, talking about, well, what's transpiring, has transpired and is transpiring down in New Orleans and the Gulf Coast region post-Katrina. Chris, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So much to cover, so little time. You have just come out. When is that study coming out? Today?
Yes, this week the major report is the biggest study to date about the status of New Orleans and the Gulf Coast in the wake of Hurricane Katrina. So going into the one-year anniversary next week.
We've all seen so much about everything that goes on in Katrina, and you know, it was 24/7 nonstop coverage, and it slacked off and slacked off, and eventually there's hardly anything on the news anymore. So everything must be just fine down there now, right?
Well, I wish that were the case. And if you go down to the Gulf Coast, and we've made many trips down, fact-finding missions with the Institute for Southern Studies and our project Gulf Coast Reconstruction Watch, what everybody will tell you is, boy, it seemed like there are a lot of TV cameras there at the beginning, but like you're saying, they feel like they've been left behind. And in a lot of ways, that's the reality. After a big initial wave of enthusiasm and interest, the people really wanting to reach out and help the people in the Gulf Coast. Once those cameras turned away, the region was really left to fend for itself all over again. And what our report pretty conclusively finds, and this is, we were really interested to see just how was the Gulf faring after 1 year. And after analyzing over 250 statistical indicators, having 50 status reports and in-depth investigations and profiles from community leaders, the picture is just unmistakable that this region, the recovery is just failing. And a lot of that has to do with federal leadership and misplaced priorities at the national level.
Well, it seems from what I know that there was certainly one group who did not ignore the Katrina disaster, and that was all the big well, all the vultures that usually descend upon an area like that after a disaster.
Well, that's just shocking, is how quickly these companies moved in to try to turn a buck off of people suffering down there. As one of the people we talked to called it an orgy of greed and opportunism. People were just shocked at these companies. And what was really surprising is right after the storm, over $1.5 billion were handed out in contracts, and these were to all these major players that we'd heard scandals about before and their dealings in overseas and Iraq and other places, the Halliburtons, the Bechtels, big national companies, while local communities, local businesses were trying to get a hand up so that they could help out in the recovery, but they weren't getting the money. And what was really shocking is that after this scrutiny, and there was a flurry of bad press about that, by November, the new head of FEMA, after the old one was deposed, said that he was going to rebid all of those contracts. And if you went into summer of this year, he said they were going to do that within the next couple weeks. It took them until the summer of this year before they even explored rebidding those. And even after that, they ended up giving a lot of them to the same old players.
And didn't a lot of the money, they had this go zone project that the president bragged about. He said this bill is going to, you know, rebuild the Gulf Coast. Didn't a lot of that money go places other than where the immediate disaster was?
Well, that's what's really amazing, too, is this is called a trickle-down recovery plan, where it's the idea that you just kind of hand out some tax breaks and hope that some businesses might set up shop. And just keep in mind, in the wake of this storm, we had this enormous opportunity to really take some leadership. You know, we could have created a Gulf Renewal Corps, where you could have put some federal money right into hiring the people who are displaced from the region to start rebuilding their own schools and hospitals, get back to work, help them out, help their community out. We had a real opportunity there. Instead, with this trickle-down approach of just handing out tax breaks, handing out big, no big contracts, and just kind of letting these big companies do what they wanted. And so exactly what you're saying, the go zones were a surprising case where a lot of the money didn't even go to companies that were based there. A lot of them didn't even set up shop. And frankly, that whole project has been a disaster where very few jobs and very few businesses have really been stimulated. And this is really a problem. There's some 200,000 people that are still displaced from New Orleans. I don't think a lot of people understand that. These people are still scattered all over the country wanting and trying to get back home. And they face obstacle after obstacle. And one of the biggest ones is 1 out of 4 of them don't have a job. And that's what makes it especially criminal that all these companies aren't giving them jobs to get back home.
Well, I read immediately after the concern, trucking companies, fleets of dump trucks came in from other areas of the country and were given no-bid contracts to haul stuff away while local companies sat there with their trucks being unused. And just many terrible stories like that. And the prices for the people who are there, the people who are left in that area, have skyrocketed. The energy costs, the grocery costs, and everything else. And like you said, with 1 out of 4 out of job, things don't look good in that area for a long time, do they?
Well, that's the thing, and it could have been different, I think, is the most important thing to know. You know, President Bush was in New Orleans yesterday, kind of an unannounced visit. I'm not sure he wanted too many people to know he was going. And there was a big, but at the time, when he did get there, there was a big, kind of photo op, and he said, well, it's going to take a long time. But there's absolutely no reason why it should have taken so long. With some real leadership and activist energy, really taking hold of the situation, you could have made sure that, for example, money was spent to rebuild rental housing. Most of the people displaced from New Orleans were renters. How come not a dime of money has gone to help rebuild rental housing? You could have made sure that the money went to the homeowners. There's been these big programs in both Mississippi and Louisiana to help out homeowners. Not one dime, not one check has been cut to a single homeowner as a result of those programs. And it's just because there's not the will to do it. It's just there's been foot dragging, there's been delays, and it just doesn't seem to be a priority at the federal level. And the conclusion of a report is that lack of political will and those misplaced priorities, that's what's holding the region back.
How about federal oversight on this spending? The Department of Homeland Security, the money that has been let there, has there been any oversight on it?
Well, that's another example of where it really took federal leadership to make sure this turned out different. You know, you talk about these contracts. One of the things we revealed in our report on and our Gulf Coast Reconstruction Watch website In 2001, there was an audit done of the contracting department at FEMA, and the audit said it's a total mess. They're supposed to create a database of small business contractors, of quote-unquote minority contractors, that they were supposed to create these so that when there was an emergency, they didn't have to just turn to the Halliburtons and Bechtels. They never created that database, and that's why the money all went to these big players. So you go right up to the top, there wasn't that oversight. And one of the key findings, there's one story by investigative reporter Jordan Green, which just tells this mind-boggling story of mismanagement, to see contracts going to these politically connected players all over the country, some big, some small. You know, a pastor in West Virginia, this religious leader in West Virginia who got a contract even though he admitted he'd never done anything like this before, and apparently he was tied in with somebody and he got the money. No oversight there. And the key point here for people to understand, there's been a lot of stories about how individuals, people who were displaced by the storm, were misspending, you know, the money they got, this $2,000, that they were spending it on things that they shouldn't have been spending. That probably happened, and there's no doubt about it. But the fact is, what our report shows is that the amount misspent by corporations from corporate fraud, from scandals and abuse of that taxpayer money, is 50 times larger than any amount misspent by people who are displaced by the storm. So that's important to remember when you're thinking about taxpayer money, where that money's going. It's when you look to these big contractors, that's the biggest sinkhole.
Well, that's how it always is. We don't hear about the government abuse. Tell me if you know anything about this. I heard a story, I guess we all did, right after Katrina happened, about them sending a cruise ship down there. I believe it was Carnival. They sent a cruise ship down there, and all over the news it was about what a wonderful thing it was. They sent this cruise ship to harbor, you know, to handle people, to house people in this emergency and so forth. And I found out later that almost immediately upon finding out that the thing had hit, that Carnival got a hold of their good friend Jeb Bush, and before you knew it, why, they had a government contract, a massive government contract for that cruise ship to sit there, and it made far more money than it would have during normal times.
Yeah, that's one of the we have a profile of what we call the disaster profiteers, and Carnival Cruise Line definitely comes to the fore. They got $236 million for temporary housing folks on these ships for about 6 months. It came out to about $240,000 per family to put them on these ships. That doesn't sound like a very good deal to me. And what it kind of transpired, and it took a long time for this to come out, and government auditors haven't done much about it. The fact is that, you know, the company's advertiser director, Rick Cooper, this is somebody who had given $115,000 to the Republican Party committee since 2002 to support Jeb Bush and George W. Bush's reelection campaigns. And we found out is that probably one of the leading reasons they got that contract after the storms was that Florida Governor Jeb Bush sent an email encouraging Carnival to get the contract. He sent the email to Michael Brown, the deposed FEMA director. And this is kind of the story of cronyism and political connections playing out that shows just no real commitment to holding these companies accountable and no real stewardship of taxpayer money. You know, people are complaining about how much this has cost, but there's been no concern about how much is spent in these corporate contracts, so much of it that goes to scandal and abuse.
I think we've got a call from that area there. Let me just check here and see. Hello?
Yeah, this is Sarge.
And let me see if I've done the phone thing right here. Are you still with us, Chris?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Yeah, Sarge, go ahead with your question. Sarge, you live in that area, do you not?
Yeah, I live in Marion County, but my twin sister and I have a lot of contacts in Jackson County, and I cover that for powersandmorrison.com. One thing that is going on down there is the FEMA trailers are just reeking with the smell of formaldehyde. Are you finding a lot of that in the areas that you're looking in?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question. Another one of our great reporters in the report named Sue Sturgis did a whole piece about FEMA's toxic trailers, and there is no doubt this is a huge issue. And, you know, there have been, they've gotten at least 46 complaints about suspected formaldehyde contamination. I think they're growing every day. This is clearly a big problem. And if you just step back, if you think of all the scandals that have been happening around these trailers, the fact that you had thousands sinking in Hope, Arkansas that weren't even being put to use, you have a lot of these trailers are only 240 square feet. You know, this people have just gotten the raw end of the stick on these trailers from day one, and then to find out on top of that that these are filled with a toxic chemical, formaldehyde, was just adding insult to injury.
Well, now, one thing I have found out is that the people there tell me if the bullet goes flying into one of those trailers, it will go straight through it. There is absolutely no protection there.
Well, that's another thing, is really you had an opportunity, and this is interesting because there were a lot of designers who came up with innovative designs for housing, temporary housing, that would be more sturdy if there was another storm, because the fact is the recovery is moving so slowly. You know, a lot of these people are still sitting in trailers, and here we are in hurricane season again, right? And these are some pretty flimsy structures to be living in if there's another storm that comes along.
If I might break in here, I believe that I read somewhere where those trailers, bottom line, end up costing the government about $73,000 a piece.
Yeah, well, we don't have that statistic, but that sounds about right. And again, this is a case where we had these great designs that could have been pursued, that would have been a lot better use of the money. And instead, we're stuck with these flimsy trailers. A lot of them were the wrong size, filled with formaldehyde. It doesn't sound like we're getting our money's worth.
I guess
well, I'm sorry, guy.
Oh, Sarge, yeah, we're getting a little feedback on your phone there, Sarge. Go ahead.
Okay. One thing that I've found out, too, is that the hospitals are supposed to be getting a payment from FEMA, and some of the people who have gone in on FEMA-related situations are not getting their bills paid, so the hospitals are now calling and saying, where's our money? And they're calling FEMA, and FEMA's giving them a runaround. Like one woman I know, she is saying, she's told me that the hospital calls her almost daily, and she calls FEMA, and she finally found out after a year almost that FEMA told her she didn't put post office box on her address, where they asked her, what is your post office box number, and she gave it, and they just wrote down the number. And this sat for a year with no action whatsoever.
And I think you're describing a situation that we heard just from person after person. You know, and again, this gets to this leadership issue. You know, clearly a lot of people will tell you, the person I talked to at FEMA was a huge help. A lot of good things happened. So it's not necessarily about the people, but it's the fact that, you know, and, you know, there's also been a lot of bad stories. But I think it just comes down to it's the attitude of the agency. It's like, is this going to be a can-do attitude? Are they getting the resources they need? Are they being told? It's like, look, even this seems like a dangerous situation, get in there and take care of the problem, right? And it's that type of leadership and can-do attitude, it's just not coming from the top, right? If they felt like they were getting that from the top, you would hear it. And the health situation is just a total mess. If you go in New Orleans, just that about half the hospitals aren't open yet, including the big charity hospital, the one that served those who didn't have insurance. Just no real commitment to get that up and running. You saw in Mississippi, there was a nonprofit that was providing health care to the uninsured along the coast. They had, out of nine of their clinics, four of them shut down. Federal officials came in and said, oh, we'll take care of that in about 15 days. And then as of May, they hadn't done anything, you know. And so, again, it was just kind of that lack of leadership and can-do attitude.
Sarge, thank you very much for your call.
Thank you, Guy.
Good to hear from you. How about the insurance? Have you folks been involved in that at all, Chris, about some of the terrible problems we're hearing about people having trouble getting insurance claims covered?
Yeah, well, you know, that was one of the areas that it's been so hard to get good concrete information about that. I mean, believe me, we've read all the stories and we heard, you know, lots of anecdotal stories about people who just have gotten the complete runaround. Some people have, as of this point, still haven't heard from their insurance company and they just can't get an answer. You get these companies that are pulling out of the region in droves, and it's happening where you are too in South Florida. And I think this is a real issue. It's clear. It's like these companies are making, in some cases, billions of dollars in profits. It's one of the most lucrative industries, and this is part of what they do. This is part of what insurance is about. And now they've made the decision that this is something they don't think they can do. And it's putting lots of people in limbo. And when you pair that up with the fact that they're not these people aren't getting help from these programs, the federal programs that then are being carried out by the states in Mississippi and Louisiana, that not a dime of that money has come through, and these people are being put in an impossible situation.
Well, yes, you mentioned where I live. We have the same thing here right now with the insurance premiums going up. I'm hearing every middle-class person I talk to is saying that, well, we're going to have to leave the Gulf Coast. We're going to have to move someplace where we're not getting gouged for insurance because of hurricanes, the premiums. And I'm talking about a bunch of people that didn't even have any have any claims, you know, had them doubled and tripled. So that's just the nature of the beast, I guess. Chris, any final words before we go?
Well, I think the message here is, you know, there are hundreds of thousands of people, both still in the Gulf and those who are just still scattered across 50 states, who are just waiting for some leadership. They're waiting to see money being spent in the right places, you know, not for corporate tax breaks and spent on real human needs. They're waiting. And a lot of them, you know, time is running out. They're just deciding they can't do it. They can't make it home. And this is a real tragedy. You know, and I think, you know, there's an interesting thing that came up. I was talking to someone yesterday. There has yet, Congress and the White House have yet to commemorate what happened on August 29th, their anniversary next week, in any way. All they had to do was pass a simple resolution, you know, and think of the other tragedies that befallen the country after 9/11 and other cases, how quickly they moved to say this was a tragedy that we should honor. No such official acknowledgement coming out of Washington about this moment of immense suffering, which that tragedy is still unfolding to this day. And what it clearly will take is some change of leadership and direction going all the way to the top if we're going to turn this around. And hundreds of thousands of people who are affected and devastated by Hurricane Katrina are waiting for that kind of change.
Chris Crome, thank you so much for being on the program today. I know all the folks down along the Gulf Coast enjoyed hearing it, and everybody around the country appreciates the heads up on, hey, folks, let's not forget about this. It's still a tragedy, and we still have to be involved and do what we can do to push things along. Thank you so much. And about your website, ReconstructionWatch.org, right?
That's right. I appreciate you having me on. And people, if we want to read more information and read the full report, it's a long 100 pages, but I think I believe it's worth every page of reading. It's at www.ReconstructionWatch.org.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bye now. My, oh, my. But it's typical, isn't it? Isn't it so typical? When you think of the tragedies that happen around the world, even think about the tsunami that happened last year, gone and forgotten about, and things are there's still utter devastation there. What is it about it, we humans, that when something happens, we jump on it, we help, you know, there's an immediacy to it, an urgency, and everybody pours money and time and everything in. But gradually, everybody just backs off and goes away and waits for the next bad thing to happen before we get involved again. And when, in fact, this is a national tragedy. This wasn't something that just happened to the Gulf Coast. My God, no. This went all the way up. It's well, you know, I'm from the Midwest. And where does all the grain go from the Midwest? Most of it goes right down the Mississippi River on big barges. And the port was messed up. So, you know, it causes grain prices to fluctuate. Things that are shipped into, you know, the huge port in New Orleans were affected. And a quarter of the people out of jobs. And the tourism industry that they had there wiped out for a good long time, putting many people out of work that are in the food service industry and that sort of thing, working in the casinos. Hey, the casinos, you don't need to worry for them. They'll be back. They're building bigger and better than ever, and they're building on land this time instead of on those idiotic barges. That's still one of the dumbest things I ever heard of, whether you are for or against casinos. The idea that they wouldn't let them build them on land. Oh, had to take a cough break there. Yeah, the idea that they wouldn't build them on land, they had to put them on barges just so that they could say that they weren't on state lands. I mean, it's absurd. So Katrina comes along, and now it's okay to build them on land. Fine. So I don't feel sorry for the people that own the casinos in that industry, but I do feel sorry for all the folks that work there, and there were a goodly number of people there around Biloxi and all that hell that was completely wiped out down through there. So, you know, I'm asking that please don't forget these people. And I hope the media does their job in the next week and does commemorate this thing. It's the worst thing that's ever happened to this country in the way of a natural disaster. Money-wise, anyway, we had the horrible hurricane around the turn of the century down in Galveston, was it, and killed 5,000 or 6,000 people. But this was utter devastation. It's one of our great cities. I know how the media covered it, as if it was nothing but a slum. But, man, I want to tell you, if you've never been to New Orleans is a city with soul, city with character. And yes, there's a lot of poverty in New Orleans, and there probably always will be. But it is a delightful city to visit, and they've had their tourism literally wiped out. And just think of all the jobs that are gone and the people that are suffering on account of it. It's far, far, well, it's much more far-reaching than most people can even grasp around here. We saw all the pictures of people sitting on the empty slabs, cement slabs, where their homes used to be along the Gulf Coast, and even for a couple of miles inland. But that didn't begin to cover the devastation and all that took place there. It was a horrible, horrible thing. I have a friend that for quite a long time after it happened, he's a dentist, and every Friday, him and his church group, they would head to that area, and they cooked food and did what they could, and they finally, for monetary reasons, had to give it up quite recently, actually. But they went for months and months and months and went every single weekend, drove up there with trailers and so forth and served food and did what they could do to help people along. So, you know, Americans are very generous people, and we always help out when there's a terrible disaster, but we are a bit too easy to forget. It's too easy for us to forget that tragedy continues on there. I'm sure just about all of you know somebody that lives in that area. I certainly do. And just talked to a gentleman last week that's got a little business close to near here who moved in from New Orleans after that happened, and he's having a hard time getting going here. But he could not go back to New Orleans because he's lost his home and everything he had and his business and everything, and he's trying to get started again and having a tough time of it. So, you know, what did we hear? What's the big story on the news about Katrina? Big story on the news yesterday was that the crime's gone way up in Houston. Well, and they blamed it all on the Katrina folks. Well, we didn't have any trouble before the Katrina folks moved in. Hey, you got a bunch of unsettled people with no jobs, nothing to do all day long, abject poverty. I guess the crime rate's going to go up. Deal with it. Just deal with it. It'll get better. That was a very informative interview, but it also quite depressing to me to think about that wonderful city and that whole area down there. It's beautiful, beautiful area. That little drive into Biloxi there down along the coast, coming in town from the east. As you can tell, I've been to the casinos there. But that little drive right along the ocean there, right along the Gulf, just beautiful, beautiful little southern town, Biloxi, you know, and then you know, all those homes are gone, completely wiped out, and for a good bit up the coast there. So, but there will be a brighter day, and this is America, and that city will be rebuilt somehow, some way. We'll get it back to probably never the way it was, probably never with the same kind of soul that it had before, the character that it had before. Fortunately, I guess, Bourbon Street was saved. But wasn't it something, though? The day after it happened, after it hit that night, everybody thought, my God, this is wonderful. That city's been saved. We thought it was going to get, you know, utter devastation come in. And then we started hearing about the levees going away. And the tragedy that followed. Terrible, terrible thing. Well, we're going to stop for the news at the top of the hour, and I'm going to get some more cold medicine here, as if I haven't had enough already. Suffering a little bit from that today. And we hope you'll hang on, stay on for the second hour of the program. We've got a gentleman coming up that's got a fascinating story to tell you. I'm talking fascinating. So don't go anywhere. We'll be back after the news.
Network. Germany has joined France and the U.S. in saying that Iran's response to a package of incentives is unsatisfactory because it does not mention whether Iran will suspend its uranium enrichment program. Iran has until the end of the month to comply with that demand or face possible U.N. sanctions. European Union diplomats will meet with U.N. Secretary General Kofi Annan tomorrow in Brussels to try and work out the details of an expanded EU peacekeeping force in Lebanon. Italy has already agreed to lead the force with up to 3,000 Italian troops. U.N. humanitarian workers are distributing aid in various Lebanese villages today after surveying the damage caused by Israeli airstrikes. So far, they have found water shortages, widespread crop failures, and a need for basic relief items throughout southern Lebanon. 6 truckloads of supplies are en route from Syria, and 4 containers now aboard a French ship are expected to be distributed tomorrow. A search continues in Gaza for 2 missing Fox News journalists kidnapped 10 days ago by a previously unknown group of extremists. Reverend Jesse Jackson heads to that area tomorrow to see if he can help secure their release. 2 more American soldiers have been killed in Baghdad during the past 24 hours. In addition, car bomb explosions across the country have left 17 Iraqis dead and a number wounded, including 2 police officers. 7 suspected Al-Qaeda have been killed at an Afghanistan housing complex following a clash between Afghan and coalition forces. Dutch police say they now believe there was no terror threat connected to the suspicious activity aboard a Northwest airliner jet yesterday, which caused the pilot to turn the plane around and return to Amsterdam. The plane had been en route to India. The 12 passengers interrogated about their activities are still in custody, however, and the investigation continues. Austrian investigators say a young woman found near Vienna has been identified now as a girl whose disappearance on her way to school 8 years ago triggered a nationwide search. She says her kidnapper had kept her confined in a garage until she was finally able to escape yesterday. A short time later, her abductor committed suicide. The only survivor of January's Sago mine explosion in West Virginia, which killed 12 coal miners, is suing the International Coal Group and 5 other companies for negligence. The 9th planet from the sun, Pluto, has been declassified and is no longer considered the smallest planet in our solar system. In fact, it's no longer considered a planet at all. The world's leading astronomers meeting in Prague have rewritten the guidelines, and under them, Pluto is merely a wannabe. It's a so-called dwarf planet, along with 3 other celestial bodies called Sirius, Charon, and Xena. Statewide wildfire emergency has been declared in the state of Washington, where 25,000 acres have been burned.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
Last week, Dell recalled more than 4 million laptop batteries made by Sony. Today, Apple Computers recalling 1.8 million Sony batteries for the same reason, because they might be a fire hazard. The two recalls are the two largest in U.S. history involving electronics or computers. The federal government says women can now buy the morning after pill without a prescription so long as they can prove they're over 18. Minors still need a doctor's note to buy the pills called Plan B, which are manufactured by Bayer Pharmaceuticals. New home sales down again last month and are now down to 21.6% than they were a year ago at this time. The new number of claims, or the claim for new unemployment benefits claims, fell by 1,000 last week to 313,000. That's still slightly below predictions by analysts. BP is again cutting production in its Prudhoe Bay oil field, this time because of technical problems. Production was cut earlier because of a pipeline corrosion. Congress has ordered a hold on Medicare reimbursements to hospitals, doctors, and other providers for the last 9 days of September. That's the end of the current budget year. Lawmakers say their only choice was either to delay those payments or cut them altogether. Gold is trading at $628.40 an ounce this hour, down $4.60. Light sweet crude is up 3 cents. Make that 34 cents at $72.15 a barrel. On Wall Street, the markets are mixed. Dow down to 12 at 11,286. NASDAQ down 4 at 2131. The S&P 500 is up 1/2. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back. Glad to have all of you along with us here this afternoon on the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Yes, indeed. Lots of hours of continuous programming here on the Head On Radio Network now, something that we're very happy about, and we hope you are as well. Hope you're enjoying the program today and all of the programs. We've got Bruce Birch coming up at 5 o'clock Eastern Time, I'm talking here, and then Bob Kincaid following his show from 7 to 10. So do tune in for all the great programs here on the Head On Radio Network, the other network. That's right. There is another one, you know. Got a guest coming up about 4:15. We're going to take a break about that time and get them on the line. And got a story coming up that, well, I think I posted on the chat room. If what happened to him had happened to me, I know as sure as I'm sitting here that I would be in jail. That's for sure. I'll tell you what a... what a story he's got to tell, so I'm sure you'll be interested with his story. Hey, we've got somebody on the phone right now. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, guys, it's Terry in Fort Myers.
Hi, Terry.
You know, you were talking about the, you're talking to that guy, and he was talking about the insurance companies down here, and, up in the Gulf Coast area. I just wanted to share what happened to us down here. Now, we have had no damage. We went through Charlie, we went through Wilma, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, we got a note. Now, here in our condo association, we got a notice that our policy would not be renewed, our hurricane insurance and all that
stuff.
And it was by Nationwide. That's who's had our insurance since the place was built in 83. We've never had a claim, ever. This place is built like a fortress. Okay, it's concrete block, except for the interior walls are all concrete and the roof is concrete. I mean, this thing's it's a bunker.
Yeah.
Okay, and then obviously it's got stucco around it and this and that. But we got notice that they were going to drop our insurance. Well, come to find out, nobody will write the insurance.
Mm-mm.
Nobody.
You're telling me a story that's oh so familiar to me personally. Keep going.
Okay, so the only option allegedly that we had, or have, I should say, is with this Citizens company.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, these people are on the brink of bankruptcy.
Yeah.
If we have a claim, they can't pay.
Yeah, it's state money.
Okay, and, well, actually, it's a private company that's allegedly guaranteed by the state.
Right.
Okay, now, I'm not real sure what that arrangement is, because I haven't really got a handle on all that. However, we were paying $43,000 a year for that insurance with Nationwide. Guess what our premiums went to?
Well, let me see. If it went,
sitting down.
If it went up the same amount ours did, percentage-wise, it would have gone up to about $120,000.
I would have been happy.
Ours was
I
tripled.
Would have said, thank you. $385,000 from $43,000.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And the people in here, you talk about hot.
Well, yeah, and in many cases, what are they going to do?
They were smoking hot. And I tell you what, I thought we had this big meeting. We had actually a bunch of different meetings. I really thought at the very first meeting where people could voice their questions, I thought it was going to descend into a physical melee.
Yeah.
And I mean, these people were, I was getting near the door because I said, you know, this starts descending into that, I'm out of here. You know, I don't want no part of that garbage. But, yeah, so we're going to get, you know, obviously our maintenance fees now have gone up $150 a month, plus we're going to be getting hit with $1,500 assessment.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, where I live, we had a $7,000 assessment, which means next year the maintenance fees are going up $600 a month. And,
yep.
You know, the problem is you want to sell your place. Now who's going to want to buy a place that's got nearly $1,000 a month maintenance fee on it just because of the insurance? It's going to drive real estate prices down. It's going to be devastating.
That's exactly correct. And here's the other punchline that was brought to us. The damages for Charlie have not been factored into the insurance premiums yet. That won't happen until next year. Wilma won't happen until the following year. Guess what? You think they're high now? They're going up.
Well, have you, as I have, talked to many, many, many people who are saying they've got to sell out and move out of here?
I already personally know of, literally personally know of about 14 people,
yeah.
14 families,
yeah.
I should say, that have literally left the state because they cannot afford it.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And, I mean, they did okay because, you know, in the last year, you know, prices down here in certain areas just literally doubled.
But there's a glut on the market right now.
Right now is not a good time to be selling.
No, it sure is not.
But, it's brutal. And then my folks who come down here and spend 6 months a year, actually they're over in Pompano, there were some guys who were adjusters that came down here last year for, you know, they're independent adjusters working as subcontractors for these different insurance companies. Well, these guys had just left the Gulf Coast area. And some of the stories these guys were telling were just phenomenal. What people don't understand, I think, you know, a lot of people don't understand. They think a lot of that damage was done by wind. Okay, the wind does very, very little damage, literally. They got hit with a 40-foot tidal surge.
Sure.
That he said that, because I was over there, I was talking to him, and he said that he would go out to addresses, okay, to assess the damage. And the only thing that was there was a concrete slab. There was no timber, there was no wreckage, there mm-hmm. was no debris. It was gone. It was just a plain slab, nothing, I mean, as far as the eye can see. And he said that there was a 46-foot sailboat, what did he say, 12-foot in a tree, 7 miles inland. So you tell me how much water they got.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and the insurance companies all around the Gulf Coast saying, well, if, you know, it wasn't the wind, vice
yeah,
versa.
The water is what always causes the damage.
Yeah, what a mess. Hey, I got to run.
I understand, but thank you for letting me throw that out there.
Yeah, hey, we We're in the same boat, brother. I tell you what. Yeah.
We're all treading the same water.
Yeah. Thanks very much.
Okay. Bye bye now.
Yeah, it's a nasty situation. And, you know, people, you know, in the case here, we're talking about $7,000 assessment just for 1 year for insurance. And I'm not talking about any big millionaire pad either, folks. I'm talking about an ordinary home. People have mortgages and so forth. They've got to pay that insurance or sell out or be foreclosed upon. And what are they going to do? Pay a lot of them on fixed incomes and so forth? Man, I'll tell you what, it's a rough situation. It's a very rough situation, and the insurance companies did have record profits last year. And it turns out one of the Republicans running for governor right now, they find out that while he was the insurance regulator here in Florida, he was buying and selling insurance company stock, personally. Odd, don't you think? Hey, we're going to head out for a little break here while we get a hold of our next guest, and we'll be back in a minute. Don't go away.
All the other girls here are stars, you are the northern lights. They try to shine through your curtain, you're too close and too bright. Well, they try and they try, but everything that they do is the ghost of a trace of a pale imitation of you. I'll be the one. Drive you back home, Kathleen. This party was made with the night air and the chance that a smile will wipe its way from your face to one of the boys in your line. Well, you act like you're hip to their tricks and you're strong but a virgin. Wurlitzer are hard, never once had a song. I'll be the one to drive you back home, Kathleen. And I'll have you back by break of day. I'm going your way anyway. And if you'd like to come along, I'll be yours for a song. Oh, 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 oh.
Hey, we're back with the Guy James Show. Welcome back. Glad to have you along with us. And as I promised everybody, I have a gentleman on the phone that has got quite a story to tell. His name is Raed Jarar, and Raed is back fairly recently from the Middle East and ran into some, well, what I'd consider quite a problem. Raed, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Thank you so much for being with us today on the program.
Thank you for having me.
I saw your website, and I can't remember how I got to your website. It was linked to somebody else, I think. And I read your story, and I thought, I've just got to have him on the program. It's Raed, for our listeners, you want to look up his website here. It's Raed, Raed, in the middle, .blogspot.com. Raed, in the middle, .blogspot.com. Look this up. You'll enjoy his website very much. I know I did. You had just returned a couple of weeks ago from Jordan and Syria?
Yeah, it was a couple of weeks ago.
And what were you doing there?
I managed to put together a delegation from the U.S. During my work. I work with the Global Exchange as Iraq Project Director. So we put together a delegation from the U.S. and another delegation from Iraq, representing Iraq parliamentarians. So we had a number of meetings in Jordan between the U.S. delegation that represents a number of U.S. anti-war movements and peace and justice movements, in addition to some ex Congress members and people who are currently working with Congress members. And we had a couple of meetings with Iraqi parliamentarians who represent the main Sunni and Shia and liberal secular groups in the parliament to discuss the latest about Iraq and what do Iraqis think of pulling out the U.S. troops and ending the occupation.
And what did they think about it?
Well, it was a quite impressive image, in fact, because one of the major meetings that we had, it had representatives of both the biggest Sunni and the biggest Shia groups in the parliament, and they gave us this united message from both Sunnis and Shia, demanding a timetable for withdrawing the occupation troops in a very clear and strong way. And they have like this vision of what will happen during the timetable for withdrawing the troops and after that, and they even have some mechanisms that they are depending on to request this timetable for withdrawing the troops, and this includes even stopping renewing the multinational task force in Iraq under the United Nations, because every year the Iraqi government renews the mission of the multinational forces in Iraq under the United Nations supervision. So there is, I think, a project in the Iraqi parliament now to block this renewal for this year, and this will be a very clear message demanding this beginning of the withdrawal. So what they were demanding is not an immediate withdrawal. They were being pragmatic, and they did not want to harm the U.S. troops. They did not want to harm the Iraqi government. The idea is that they are just requesting negotiation to start about a timetable, and these negotiations and this timetable have to start as soon as possible. And they wanted to discuss the details of how long this timetable would be and, you know, some other details. But they were very clear about not leaving any permanent bases in Iraq. They did not want any permanent bases to be in Iraq. And they wanted all of the U.S. troops to leave, you know, in coordination with the Iraqi government.
Well, I'm in agreement with that. I'm glad. Now, you went from there then to visit a Lebanese refugee camp.
Yeah, in fact, the delegation then split. Half of us went to Syria and the other half went to Lebanon. And so I stayed with the part of the delegation that stayed in Syria, and we went to a number of refugee camps that Lebanese people were staying at in Syria, they were not really refugee camps. They were either public schools or some other governmental buildings that the Syrian government opened for the Lebanese refugees to stay at. And it was so impressive to see the Syrian support on the grassroots level to the Lebanese refugees, because the government did not even have to send anything. They did not have to send food or mattresses or money or clothes or anything, because the neighborhood, people from the neighborhood were just coming voluntarily and bringing food and mattresses and even giving money to the Lebanese refugees. So places that that our delegation went to, we even noticed that the neighborhood donated a TV and a satellite for the refugees so that they can watch news. And there was this very strong support, emotional support, and physical support to everyone who's coming from Lebanon. It was really nice to see that. But the sad part about it, that people were really angry against the U.S., very, very, very angry against the U.S., that whenever someone knows that we came from the U.S., people were not, happy about the U.S. politics in the Middle East, and they were not even ready to be nice to us, even though that they knew we represent the peace and justice movement and we are against the war. But they were saying, go back to your country and stop your government from attacking us. Because they realize that, we are at the end of the road, taxpayers, and our money is being used to attack them and attack their home. So I remember I personally got shouted out in one of the refugee camps because I live in the U.S. And they said, you can't go and pay all of this money in taxes to buy bombs and send it to Israel and bomb our houses, then come to shelters and apologize and say, we want to help you. You want to help us? Go back to your country and change your government. And you want to come visit us? Come visit us in our homes, not in our shelters that we went to after our homes were destroyed. So you can feel this bitterness, unfortunately, that is caused by the mistakes of the U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East. And how big is the size of the mission that we have to be working on, we the people of both the Middle East and the U.S., to refix, fix the damage that happened during the last few years or the last decade because of the U.S. foreign policy?
Well, it's very hard for them to feel any joy towards someone when the bombs that fell on them said made in the USA, that's for certain. So you came back to Washington, D.C. from overseas, right? And then you decided to go to New York City.
Yeah.
And that's where this big story started that really caught my interest. I was interested in your story before that.
Yeah.
But I'd like for you to tell people what happened to you at your JetBlue terminal in JFK.
Yeah, I mean, this is the other sad part of the story is that, for me as an Arab or a Muslim living in the U.S., I get shouted at when I go to the Middle East because I'm a, quote-unquote American.
I apologize to you for that.
Harassed when I come back to the U.S. because I'm a Muslim.
I'm very sorry about that. I really am.
No, you don't have to be sorry. I'm just saying it's an irony that wherever you go, you are counted on the other side. So when I came back to New York, there was a play about Iraq and Guantanamo. And I took a part of discussions after the opening day of the play. And then the next day I went to JFK because I was coming back home to California. I'm based in California. So I was stopped in the airport near the gate by four officers who told me that people are offended because of the T-shirt that I'm wearing. I was like totally shocked because, I didn't even know which T-shirt I was wearing. I looked at the T-shirt, and it was this T-shirt that I bought from D.C., from Washington, D.C. It says in both Arabic and English, "We will not be silent." So the Arabic fonts are bigger, and the English ones are a little bit smaller under them.
But it said clearly in English, "We will not be silenced."
Yeah, it says. Okay. So they came and they said, the four officers came, and they told me, people are offended because of your T-shirt. And I said, the message is not offensive at all. I'm very sorry if I offended anyone. And they said, no, it's not about the message. It's about language. And I said, you mean because I have Arabic letters? And one of the officers said, yes, of course, wearing a T-shirt with this language and coming to the airport now is like wearing a T-shirt that reads, I'm a robber, and going to a bank.
Oh, no. I'm amazed that you can have such a great attitude about this. I really am.
I mean, I don't have a great attitude. This is, in fact, what I told the officers. I told them, you know what? I spent all of my life living under authoritarian regimes in Iraq and Jordan and Saudi Arabia. And what's happening here is not shocking me. I mean, I've been living under this situation for all of my life. I'm not shocked. I'm just shocked that this is happening for me in New York. This is the thing that is shocking. And it's like such a shame that like the U.S. is turning into yet another authoritarian regime. One of the reasons that I moved to the U.S., one of the reasons, is that I want to wear my T-shirt without a state person coming and telling me to take it off and, you know, put it the other way around, or like, you know, how to look, or how to act. And so, I mean, it wasn't like really angry, because I know the situation. I mean, I've lived in Iraq under Saddam Hussein, and this was the situation. I lived in Saudi Arabia, like, you know, some years, and this was the situation. And I lived in Jordan, and this was the situation. So, like, it's not like a new invention of oppressing people or asking people to cover or uncover themselves. I know all of these games, but I'm very shocked that this is happening in New York, in the U.S. for me. I'm a U.S. Resident and taxpayer, and I have all of my rights. So I told the four officers that it's my constitutional right to have this T-shirt writing in Arabic, and there is no law that will prevent me from taking this T-shirt off. They wanted me to take the T-shirt off and put it upside down, and I refused. And then I felt threatened because of what I was told by the four officers, and I was being pushed, like, you know, I was, you know, it was very clear for me, because of the things that they said, that I will miss my airplane, because I was prevented to go to the airplane unless I covered the T-shirt. And then...
Now, you are an American citizen, right?
No, I have a green card.
Green card. Okay, you've got all the rights and privileges. Yes.
Yeah, I am a resident.
Okay.
So after some 15 minutes or 20 minutes of discussion, I was told that I will not be sent to the airplane unless I covered my T-shirt. So one of the customer service people from JetBlue offered to buy me another T-shirt so that I would put it on the T-shirt. And like she said, you can take it off when you get at the other airport. And so I didn't want to miss my flight, and I didn't really want to get arrested for like some weeks, like what other Arabs and Muslims were put under, you know, because of even smaller things. I mean, all of us saw what happened in the last week. Some Arabs and Muslims were arrested, or they missed their flights because they were praying. Others missed their flight and were arrested because they were using their mobile phone in the airplane before it departed. So I decided to actually, you know, take the other T-shirt, cover my T-shirt. I was feeling very bitter, very sad that my rights were taken in this very, like, you know, unconstitutional way. But I agreed because, you know, I didn't want to miss my flight. And I told them I will pursue this through a constitutional rights organization. But, like, you know, they said, oh, do whatever you want. After 5 minutes, I was called again, and they changed my seat in the airplane because I was sitting in the first three seats. They sent me to the last seat near the bathroom, and I asked, like, you know, how come this happened? You know, like, it's my right to choose my seat. I mean, I chose my seat online 4 weeks ago because I don't like to sit near the bathroom. I don't like the smell in the last seat. And it doesn't make sense that if I have a T-shirt with Arabic, that there will be limitations for the seats that I can take on the airplane. But I mean, I wasn't given a right answer. I was just like sent to the back of the airplane against my will. And I felt very, very sad because of it. I mean, I'm feeling like extremely sad. You can't imagine how much these things affect me in the U.S. Because, I mean, when I first moved to the U.S., I was looking forward to have a place to be living with without these quality of life. So it's very sad, to have these things in the U.S. on the one hand. And it's extremely sad that places that I used to live in, like Baghdad, got bombed and occupied under these excuses of giving people their rights. So I was kicked out of my home because Iraq was occupied and bombed because the U.S. Army came to give Iraqis democracy and freedom. And then I moved 10,000 miles from my home to the U.S. to have my new home here. And I get harassed by the same government in my new home. So it's like such an annoying and shocking feeling that, I wasn't expecting that I would be going through these stories in the U.S.
I wouldn't have expected it either. I've seen people get on planes with highly offensive shirts with profanity on them and so forth, and people look at them funny, but obviously you're in a position that they look at you and think you must be Osama bin Laden's brother or something. I'm amazed that you have such a good attitude. I know that you were upset, but had it been me, I must tell you that I'm one of those individuals that I probably would have ended up in jail. There's little question I would have ended up in jail. I admire your attitude and the way you've taken this, but the irony of this situation that you have just explained here is overwhelming. That you left Iraq where you, and then you come to a country with the freedoms, and then you're denied the freedoms. It's overwhelming. Well, this was JetBlue. One of the reasons we wanted to have you on. I never have had a problem with JetBlue. In fact, I've only flown with them once. I shall never fly with them again. One of the things I wanted to tell all my listeners that if you would like to call JetBlue and express your displeasure with this whole thing about a gentleman being denied his rights, which are protected, their number is, where do I have it here someplace? Okay. Yeah, it's 800-538-2583. 1-800-538-2583. And I know some of you will be calling them and letting them know what you think about this whole situation. Raed, are you planning on going back to the Middle East anytime soon?
I don't have any immediate plans, in fact. I'm planning to move to D.C. soon, so I will be going on this road trip from California to D.C., moving with my partner and our furniture.
So,
my immediate plans are just moving in the U.S., I guess.
What do you have any T-shirts picked out to wear when you go this time?
No, in fact, one of my friends yesterday was suggesting that I have to translate the First Amendment into Arabic and put it on T-shirts, when next time I get arrested, it'd be even a bigger irony.
That's just too good. That is amazing. Now he's got a great sense of humor, and so do you. That's beautiful. It really is. Raed, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today.
Thank you for having me.
Your story is fascinating, and you're a heck of a guy for putting up with that the way you did. And I apologize to you.
No, you don't have to apologize.
Well, I feel bad about it. I think it's a terrible thing, but I'm amazed at your attitude. I really am. Thank you so much. And
thank you very
folks,
much.
His blog spot, once again, I encourage you to go there. Raed, that's Raed in the middle .blogspot.com. Raed, thank you so much.
Take care, baby.
So, how would you? The story that he told there, I find the irony in that situation to be just blew me away when I first read the story. I couldn't get over it. I really couldn't. And I did not expect that when I talked to him, he would have such a great attitude about the whole thing. I'd be mad as hell. Now, it's not like this guy showed up at the airport with a Yay Osama shirt on and a Kalashnikov and some dynamite in his bag. I mean, he was back from an important mission. He's got a green card, so he is protected under the Constitution of the United States. And they go and treat him like that? Boy, I tell you. And I thought the crack about having the putting the First Amendment on his shirt in Arabic, that's just too good. I hope he does that. I would love that. I would love it. So how about you? you're ready to get on an airplane and you see an Arabic gentleman on the plane like Raid, are you automatically going to assume that he's dangerous? You know, I've been on a lot of airplanes that looked like had guys on it that looked like Timothy McVeigh. How about you? Think about that. And we're going to go to a break, and we'll be back in just a couple minutes.
Why don't we liberate these United States? We're the ones who need it worse. Let the rest of the world help us for change, and let's rebuild America first. Our highways and bridges are falling apart. Who's blessed and who has been cursed? There's things to be done all over the world, but let's rebuild America first. Who's on the hill and who's watching the valley? Who's in charge of it all? God bless the army and God bless our liberty. Jack up the rest of it all.
Him in a position of backing away. Freedom's stuck in reverse.
Let's get out of Iraq. Back on the track and let's rebuild America first. Once more. Why don't we liberate these United States? We're the ones who need it the most. You think I'm blowing smoke? Boys, it ain't no joke. I make 20 trips a year from coast to coast.
Hey, thanks for joining us here on the Guy James Show today. I love that song, Merle Haggard. And I'm not even a country western boy, but I do like Merle's music. He comes up with some good ones now and then. Glad all of you have joined us today. How'd you like Raid's story? Man, I thought that was interesting. I did. I feel bad for him on the one hand, and on the other hand, I really admire him for his great attitude and his ability to just shuck that off like water off a duck's back. I'm afraid that if they stop me under the same conditions in an airport, I wouldn't go quietly. That's for sure. No. Hey, let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. How you doing?
Good.
This is Derek Peterson. Bad time, good time.
Hey, good time. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. I was going to talk about Rumsfeld and the $2.3 trillion thing. The day before 9/11. Is that okay?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Thank you, sir. Hi, Guy.
Mm-hmm.
This is Eric from Vermont.
Yeah.
And I'd like to sort of have a little reminder. I really appreciate Raid's nice story that I've been tracking on the internet for several days now for the violation of First Amendment, whatever. I would like to sort of like read a transcript of the beginning of a CBS report that you can find on YouTube. I think I have transferred an email to you, so if any of your listeners have a question of the validity as opposed to Rush Limbaugh's lack of substantiating his facts, you have that in your email. I would like to start out, the report on YouTube goes, the CBS reporter. CBS reporter, the Pentagon, the day before 9/11, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld disclosed war, not on foreign terrorists.
Yeah.
Rumsfeld, the adversary is closer to home. It's the Pentagon's bureaucracy, CBS reporter. He said money wasted by the military poses a serious threat. In fact, Rumsfeld, it could be said that it's a matter of life or death, CBS reporter. But the next day, the world changed.
Yes.
Have you heard anything more recent than that, sir?
No, I have not. I have not. I just got that just a while ago. And no, I have not. Well, as far as the money being unaccounted for, yes. I didn't know it was $2.3 trillion, but I knew it was a lot. I knew there were billions upon billions that they've got no idea. They've got no idea where it is. Can't account for it. Can you imagine? I mean, you know, I used to have an accountant that would call me. I would turn the books into him at the end of the month, you know, and he'd do the taxes and all that. And he would call me and say, you know, that your totals are off by 12 cents here. What are we going to do? I mean, you know, he'd waste a phone call to call and tell me about 12 cents. The books didn't balance. And I'd tell him, you know, erase something and make it up. I don't care. 12 cents, he was concerned about 12 cents and the Pentagon's were billions and billions of dollars.
It was $2.3 trillion.
Oh man, I can't count that high.
$1 trillion more than the amount of the tax break within 2 months before that the 5% of the American super rich received, and you and I received $400 or $500. It was $2.3 trillion on September 10th, the day before the 9/11 attacks. And he's saying that he's blaming on the Pentagon's the Pentagon's bureaucracy. I mean, it's in the email that I sent to you. Any of your listeners can fully be aware of that fact. But the fact of the matter is that, as far as I know, nobody has ever made an explanation why $2.3 trillion has been missing from the Pentagon's budget. Some of that going back to the 2000, fiscal year 2000. And I was wondering if you had received any additional information on that in your resources to clarify any sort of, like, justification for that.
No, but I'll get on it. I will. I have a story around here somewhere that documents some of that. But $2.3 trillion. I mean, that's unimaginable. Their budget for a year is only about $550 billion, from what I understand. That's 4 years worth of budget down the drain that nobody knows where it is. It's incredible.
Well, I can't understand it either, but. I mean, I saw his picture, and I transcribed everything as accurately as I possibly could for whatever was going between CBS and Rumsfeld on a video. So either they did some super cloning or they did something. I don't know.
That's on YouTube, right?
It's on YouTube, and I have emailed you the references on that, sir.
Yeah, I'll give that out so we can get some of the others.
And maybe I'm way off in Jack Mars, Venus, or some other planet.
I've never known you to be way off anywhere.
Well, I could be. Wouldn't be the first time.
Well, you could be, but you're usually not. And I could be, but I'm usually not either. So, no, your facts are usually right on the money. So I'd say you probably got it just right. Well, you know, I promise you I'll do a little reporting on that. I'll find out more about it.
I appreciate that.
I sure will.
The great work that you're doing, sir.
Thank you very much. Good to hear from you, Eric.
You have a great day.
Yeah. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
$2.3 trillion gone, just like that. Bye-bye. You know, next thing you know, you're going to be talking about some real money there. But then again, hey, let's go back to the phone. Here. Hi, you're on the Guy Jim Show.
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita.
I wanted to just talk about a few little things, and First of all, I want to say that yesterday's interview, I really appreciate that because I'm very, very interested in energy and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, good.
And then today, too, you had some great interviews, and I liked the guy, you know, from Iraq. And I'd like to tell you something that happened to someone I know that I'm really close to just about a week and a half ago. This person is disabled, and they're on physical therapy trying to get better. And, you know, it's hot here now in Florida.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It is all of that.
So he tries to walk, you know, like every other day or so forth. So long about dusk, he was walking. And, you know, he's brisk walking. And he notices there's a cop driving along, you know, on the road. And it's the main road. It's not, you know, it's not like a side street or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And he just kept walking. And finally the policeman stopped and called out on, I guess you call it his bullhorn, and says, stop, you know. Well, he had been stopped by police before, you know, and he'd put his hands up, you know, for driving because they'd pulled a gun on him. You know, now this is a white person. This is not, you know. But anyway, he asked him all kind of questions, and then he said, do you know why I stopped you? And he said no.
Oh, this ought to be a good answer.
He said, you were walking too fast.
Walking too fast?
Yeah, walking too fast.
Well, I think he just robbed a bank and he was making a quick getaway or what?
Yeah, walking away, yeah.
Oh,
I don't know.
I don't know.
But he finally said, okay. Well, then 2 nights later, he did the same thing and another police stopped him. What are you doing out here? And he just told him he was walking, you know, for his health. And the policeman said, well, there's no law against that. So,
I don't know. Isn't it something?
And this is a rural area, you know, it's not town or nothing like that.
That's one of my pet peeves, and my wife knows that. I talk about it once in a while. I know some police officers in my life and have known many, many, many. You know, some wonderful people. And then again, mm-hmm. there are some police officers that you know the only reason that they're police officers is
mm-hmm.
because they get their jollies,
right.
you know, showing their authority to somebody.
Right, right. Yeah, and I've run into them myself, you know, and you're not in the wrong.
No.
But you do meet some nice ones, and you
Absolutely.
Do meet some jerks.
Yeah, most of them are
and
great
like
guys.
Say, yeah, and... anyway.
Yeah, that's quite
walking too fast. Don't
walking
do that.
Too fast. Well, I'll be careful in the meantime.
Yeah, yeah. And I like that guy from Iraq.
He was great. You know, that was kind of a last minute thing today. I
mm-hmm.
I read that about maybe 2:30 today, and I thought, oh, I've got to get this guy on the show. And I called him, and he said, why? Sure, he's out in California. And,
we ought to try to get that started about the first, you know. Having the translation and have a big sale on to all of us lefties.
That's the best line of the year I've heard.
Yeah,
so far.
I know.
I loved
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your call, Juanita.
Okay.
Bye-bye. That suggestion by Raed to have the First Amendment translated and put on the fronts of a T-shirt in Arabic, and then go to the airport. I don't know. His friend has suggested that to him. That's pretty clever. Maybe that's a good idea. Somebody get a business going. You could sell those on the internet. Anybody'd pay $20 for First Amendment in Arabic on a T-shirt, so you could wear it to the airport. You wear it to the airport. I'm not going to. I have a beard, and I suppose if I dyed my, you know, it's not. I'm not. I don't have. My hair that dark anymore, but probably if I dyed my hair nice and black and everything and put on the right kind of clothes and I had that Arabic T-shirt on, they'd pull me over at the airport, I'm sure. It'd be a challenge to see if they would or not, but I don't know. They're getting a little crazy. I've heard a lot of wild stories at airports here in the past few days, so just crazy stories, and the paranoia. And every time I hear this, there's a little something that pops in my head, says we're losing this war on terror that Bush has proclaimed. We are losing. And you know why we're losing? Because we're acting like a bunch of chickens. And those of you, and you know, you've heard that term, oh, you're chicken. Well, have you ever been around a bunch of chickens? Have you? Those of you that are city people, maybe you haven't. We're acting like chickens. We are. Just the slightest little provocation, they jump and, you know, and we're acting like that right now. We are. How many airplanes have turned back and gone back to the, I know, very better safe than sorry, blah, 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 blah. But we're acting strange over this. And you got to know that probably Osama's sitting in wherever he's at. He's got one of those widescreen plasma TVs sitting there watching CNN, smoking a big cigar with his feet up on the table saying, ain't this great? He has terrorized the American people. They remain terrorized to this day, probably will always remain terrorized. And, of course, his best accomplice in the whole thing has been George W. Bush, because he's fanned the flames of terror every time he has had a chance. He's used it to his advantage time after time after time. Do we still have that stupid, inane color system to orange, blue, red, yellow thing? Do we still have that? Are we at red now or blue or purple or whatever is at the top? I don't know. But that in and of itself was ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. You know, I gave a suggestion a long time ago, and people, I still think it's a good idea, maybe for some people. I said all this stuff at the airport, if everybody just fly naked, you wouldn't have to walk, you wouldn't have to take your shoes off, you wouldn't have to have your, nothing. You could just get on a plane, they haul everybody's luggage in a separate plane. So there you go. We wouldn't have to have all this problem. We try and inject a little levity into it once in a while, but we're losing. We're losing the war on terror. If there ever is such a thing, really and truly, I think that word war on terror, that phrase war on terror, has been thought up for political advantage by Mr. Bush and his minions. There's no such thing. Police actions after terror, fine. That's how we're going to take care of terror. We're not going to win it with any so-called war. You beat terrorism. Like you beat any other international organized crime syndicate, by working through your intelligence and your law enforcement communities, your allies' intelligence and their law enforcement communities, diplomacy, and some lethal covert action. That's how it's done. You don't give the enemy the undue attention that they're just craving. You don't, and we're doing it. You keep quiet and you act decisively, just like they did in Britain last week. They kept that whole thing quiet until Uncle Sam pretty much made them force their hand, and made them explain the whole thing. And you know, as for the war in Iraq, terrorism has increased drastically all over the world since we invaded Iraq. And it may not have happened here yet, but again, law enforcement and intelligence have done their respective jobs when it comes to the rather insignificant post 9/11 plots, and besides, the 9/11 terrorists have accomplished their mission here in the USA. They've done what they set out to do. We don't need to let them go any farther. You know, I guess in Britain, where the people are far smarter, the terrorists have to keep up the pressure to maintain the fear, lest the Brits wake up and break off their alliance with the failed Bush regime. They got us over a barrel right now, and damn it, we're Americans. We used to act like it. And, you know, Bush has got the whole country whipped up into a frenzy, and the media's helping them along, don't get me wrong. Johnny O says we're at the orange level here in Florida without lotions. Very good, Johnny O. Yeah, we don't need to be helping these people along. Bush has done everything he can to help America be terrorized. He may not have done any of the terrorist acts, but he has cooperated so nicely with the terrorists at every opportunity. I don't know. It bothers me. It really does. Well, I've enjoyed this program today, and I got to admit, both our guests today were fabulous, and I enjoyed them both, and I hope you did as well. And several of you have indicated that you did enjoy them very, very much, and It was very fun having Raed on. I enjoyed his story a great deal. And the other gentleman as well, talking about the Gulf Coast. You know, the one-year anniversary that's coming up next week, and we need to remember it. And we need to remember, just like he said, that it is a very, very long way from being over with. Very long way from being over with down in the southern Gulf Coast region. So, well, anyway, I want to thank everybody for listening to the program today. It's been a lot of fun for me, and I hope it was for you, and informative as well. I do want to remind you that this is a listener-supported program, and we appreciate it if you'd head to the old website, theguyjamesshow.com, and throw a few nickels in the tub there. And I see somebody reminding me about Robert Neal for Congress here in Florida. Yes, indeed. Robert's my guy. And have yourselves a great day, everybody. And remember, and be sure and stay tuned for Bruce Birch on the Head On Radio Network and Bob Kincaid after that. Never forget that you're listening to The Guy James Show. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Have a good one, everybody. See you tomorrow.